This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Ryan Rucco joins us right now. Rooks, first of all, I'm looking forward to being able to finally hear this.
Goodbye, sir.
When are we going to get that from you?
Good question, Alan. I don't know yet when you will get it. Well, actually, I do know the answer. You will never get that call again because it's, you know, John Filippelli put the kibosh on it a few years ago. But I hope you will get a home run call at some point, man. It's weird, though. I was just doing my game boards yesterday, getting ready for Nets and WNBA coming up end of next week. And or end of this week, rather, for WNBA. And dude, it feels so strange, like, doing game boards again. Like, you know, just getting back in play-by-play mode after you're going. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you have 4 months of none of that, and now it's going to really ramp up. So I'm excited to get back, but it feels weird.
Yeah, I mean, you do basically everything. So you have Nets, you have WNBA, you have NBA as well, and then, of course, the Yankees stuff. So you go from 0 to 100. You go from the guy that, you know, I know you have the great podcast, of course, with CeCe Sabathia, and we got some Star Wars to talk in a minute. But, you know, now all of a sudden it's like, I imagine for you, your schedule goes from, boy, when am I going to get back to work, to it's all coming at you really fast, and you've got to be able to transition what you're great at from one sport or even one team or two teams to something else. But I imagine you're embracing this.
Oh, yeah, dude, 100%, man. I can't wait. You know, I want to do as much, you know, Yankees, as much Nets on Yes as possible. I want to do as much WNBA and NBA on ESPN as possible. Like, I, you know how much I love this. Like, it's, you know, it's a passion for me and an art and a craft, and I'm obsessed with play-by-play, and I've missed it, man. Like, I've really missed that feeling of, you know, painting the picture and calling the action and getting lost in the energy of the moment. And so I will take as much of it as I can. When I was talking with our coordinating producer for WNBA, Sarah Guerrero, and I said, she said, like, yeah, we're probably going to get some more games. And I was like, oh, awesome. And she's like, yeah, there's going to be, you know, like 24 national games. Usually we do 16, you know, between July 24th and August 13th. And I was like, oh, you mean July 24th and September 13th when the regular season ends? She's like, no. I mean, August 13th. I was like, whoa. So we're doing just in WNBA, we're doing, you know, 50% more games than we normally do, and we're doing that in just the first 3 weeks of the regular season. Wow. And I could not be happier about it, yeah. Nor could Rebecca Lobo, because we're all, you know, we're all starved for sports, man. We can't wait to get back.
Yeah, it's tremendous. Just seeing what we saw ratings-wise over this weekend, right? Like, Yankees,
yeah,
Mets,
yeah.
Scrimmages. Like, they weren't even, like, they don't count. And yet, I know it was a Saturday night. I was tuned in. I, you know, both nights, yep, Locked in watching. But I'm also the nerd that was watching when you guys on Yes were covering inter-squad scrimmages. I mean, I'm tuned into that. That's how hungry we are here. But that's a good sign, isn't it? That we are starting to get back to some normalcy. And with that, we're allowed to now start talking about not old classic games and old classic debates and The Last Dance and things like that. We can start talking about, okay, where are we and what's the future like? I watched the Yankees this weekend, and my take was they are that team that when you watch them and at full health, this could be, and I know it's going to be an odd year because it's 60 games. I get that part of it. But just in general, when we look back on this season, this could be a real special team. Just looking at it from the pitching standpoint, the youth standpoint, and obviously the power that they have and the depth that they have.
Yeah, 100%. Alan, I totally agree, man. Watching it, you know, I've obviously been working it, so yeah. I've been locked in, but I've also just been locked in as a fan as well, trying to consume all the content I can, right, in advance of the season because we're so starved for it. And I've loved watching them throughout these inter-squad games. And then the last couple nights, finally seeing them face a different opponent. And, you know, they look like a well-oiled machine, which is remarkable given, you know, obviously the constraints that everyone has dealt with over the last 4 months. For them to look as as sharp and as focused as they have. And, you know, sometimes we talk about mentality and we kind of use it as a cliche, right? Or you know, something that, yeah, you know what, they've got the right attitude. And you're like, okay, did that really tell me anything? But I actually believe with this particular season, the Yankees having the mentality that they do and the focus that they do is very important, because this would be a year, because of how irregular it is, that I think it'd be a lot easier to not be all in, you know, to not be so championship focused, to feel like, all right, well, you know, we're going to do this because this is what we do. We want to get paid. But like, yeah, this doesn't really feel like our normal competition. This is weird. Or if you have a key player who's not there, you know, like let's say even competitive teams like the Dodgers or Braves, Dodgers will be without David Price, Braves without Nick Markakis. Like, I do wonder how it affects the collective energy of the group when you know, like, hey, like one of our key pieces, like he decided like this wasn't worth it. You know, it's not like he was hurt and we have to overcome it. Like, he decided like, this isn't the right thing for me to do. Like, I don't think this is a smart choice. Like, I do think that could cut away at a team's energy a little bit. So the fact that the Yankees have all these guys who clearly were working during the quarantine period, clearly are focused and all have had the right mentality as far as what you'd want to hear as a fan. Like, hey, you know, we don't care if it's short in season. We want a championship. Like, I actually think that's going to be a real advantage for this group.
We're talking with Ryan Rucco, old friend, joining us here on the show as he's about to get real busy covering just about everything NBA, WNBA, Yes Network with the Nets, and also with the Yankees as well. And just staying on the Yankees and really just more of what we saw this weekend, Yankees and Mets, both at Citi Field and also at Yankee Stadium. You saw cutout fans in the background, which was kind of a cute thing, a little funny. But you heard the piped in crowd noise, which we were all wondering, you know, what's that going to sound like? Is it going to be kind of weird? Is it going to be kitschy? Is it going to be, you know, are we not going to like it? I got to be honest, from a broadcast perspective, and again, you working as well, so I know you're tuned into it, and I know you heard some of it also on Friday and some of the scrimmages. It didn't bother me, and I don't feel like, and maybe it's just baseball, I'd be curious to see what it starts looking like when we do it, when we see NBA. It doesn't seem like it takes too much away, and I almost feel like I was focusing that much more on the game because it was all that was happening. You agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think it, you know, for me, I like it. I think that as much as, look, it's a television product now, right? It is going to be for some period of time exclusively a television product. And so now you have to think about how can you make it the best experience possible for the viewer. It's not like it's not inauthentic because we all know the deal, right? Like, nobody's like trying to hide the fact that like there's more noise. You know, this isn't the Colts and the Patriots pumping in crowds noise, you know? Like, I mean, this is, we all know exactly what it is. And because of that, I think it's easier to accept. And then it sort of like can trance you into more of a focused watch to what you were talking about, Alan, and then also like a little more sense of normalcy and engagement and importance. So I actually like it. Like, does it feel a little weird? Yeah, of course it does, but I do like it. I like it better than silence. And I have to say, I actually liked the cardboard cutouts.
I did.
I know they look kind of funny and weird and whatever, but to me, I actually like that look. When you're, you know, watching a game and you're seeing either empty seats behind home plate or seeing that, I actually think there's some value to having, you know, some form of activity there. You know, I'm all for it. Whatever we can do to create the television product and make it as close to, you know, what it would normally be like as possible and as enhanced as possible. I'm open to virtual fans, Alan. I'm open to all of that stuff because I think for the time being, and hopefully it's not the whole season, right? Hopefully at some point you do get some portion of the crowd in there, even if they're socially distanced and in masks. But for the time being, I want to do whatever I can to enhance the television product.
Yeah, I'm hoping, because, you know, we see NASCAR already letting, you know, a smaller amount or a smaller percentage of their capacity in. And, you know, we'll see how that works out for them long term. But if you get to a World Series, even to get to a championship level. Like I'm even hoping for the NBA too, that if the NBA can figure out how to at least have some people in the building for at least the NBA finals, just to give it a little bit more of a big time feel. But you know, I go back to what Gerrit Cole said on Friday, and by the way, he hasn't pitched a meaningful pitch yet for the Yankees, and he's my favorite player. I mean, I love listening to him talk about the game. I love how just he nerds out about it, and yet he's also such a fierce competitor as well. Having a guy like that in the clubhouse, having a guy like that on your team is so valuable. Just to have a guy like him. But he even said it, and it's not like I'm paying attention. I don't really – you hear the crowd a little bit. You hear the fake crowd noise a little bit. It doesn't really bother you. You know, even the cutouts or something like that. He's like, I'm not the type that looks into the crowd anyway. But when you are watching just the game – I caught myself doing this too when they played at Citi Field. If I'm watching just the battery, all you're seeing are kind of faces in the crowd behind. And so I'm not focused on them. And it almost feels like, oh, there's people there. You know, I believe there was a scout sitting among them at one point.
Right?
There was somebody sitting there, and it was like it all just looked blended together. So I guess we can get away with it a little bit on that. But as we transition to the NBA stuff, and I'm sure the WNBA is going to have the same type of deal as well. And you mentioned some of the virtual crowd. I believe it was it MLS that's been doing that with the Matrix boards and people from home?
Yeah.
Right?
I think so, yeah.
Can you do that in the NBA? Would that work?
That's a good question, Alan. I don't know. I mean, I think the good news is, you know, the NBA is certainly very open-minded to any possibility, you know, and whatever is going to be cutting edge. And so, you know, I think that you will see – you know, certain things that are, you know, new and feel like, you know, ways to enhance the television product so that it doesn't feel like basketball in an empty gym, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what all those specifics will be, but I'm sure you're going to see some of them. And I think you should, you know, I think you should. I think that, you know, we have learned over the last 4+ months how to adapt technologically, right? And how to make this happen. Like, I don't know, Alan, if you're at home or back in the studio now doing the show, but like we, you know, obviously for a period of time, everybody had to adjust to, okay, you're only going to, you know, operate from home. Okay, now you're going to go in certain days, whatever. Point being is like we had to dive into aspects of technology we didn't know necessarily existed or that we could make as efficient as we needed to be to uphold the standard of product. But I think, like, you know, we a lot of times, especially in the sports world, right, we're traditionalists and we don't want to see things change, but like this thrusts us into change. And who knows, like we might love virtual fans. It might be like, yo, this is great. Like it, for me as a viewer, like if it's someone real on TV or it's not, what do I care? It's not like I have a relationship with the people I'm seeing behind home plate in the shot, you know. It's true. Just sort of creating the ambiance for me.
Right.
So if you put virtual people there, like maybe it just creates more of an ambiance. Same thing with like NBA crowd. You know, for the players, I don't know if it's going to do much for them, but for the viewer at home, I actually do think that stuff can enhance the experience, even though it's going to be a little weird.
Yeah. Again, it's the new normal, as we talk about. And by the way, it's now 20 weeks I have been out of the studio. 20 straight weeks we've been doing this show out of the studio. And as you said, I know you guys have done it at Yes as well. It's you figure it out. I mean, Bart and I will use FaceTime during the show so we can at least see each other while we're doing the show. And you know how it works. You've done it. You have to make the eye contact sometimes. You got to, you know, put your hand up or whatever. So we do it that way. And it's become so normal. We've spent more time out of the studio than we have in the studio together since the show started in January. Isn't that it's crazy,
yeah.
But that's just what we've gotten. We've gotten used to it, you know, and that's what we all have to do. But we are, again, it's still competition. And it's going to be about who can win and what we're going to see out of these teams. And as we get ready for the NBA to restart, I mean, it's got to be LeBron and the Lakers that everybody has their eyes on. Can LeBron do this sprint with that team and win that championship that you know for him is going to be critically important for him and his legacy? Or is this the type of scenario, because of no crowds, because it's in a bubble and players are around each other and stuff, that this could be the one that is that year where like anyone can win? because it's just so different and so odd. Like you mentioned, no crowds, no home crowd, no home court advantage, no intensity, none of that stuff. Some guys might actually be more comfortable with the fact that there aren't crowds. I think James Harden might thrive. Like, I think the Rockets might be that team I'd be afraid to play against, because a guy like him, you know, hears everything. But when he's just in his zone, he might be the most dangerous player in the game. So when you're thinking about the NBA, and obviously you'll be calling some games too, do you think that this could be a wide open race, or do you still think it's typical NBA? There's probably three teams that have the best chance to win this thing.
No, I think it's more wide open. I actually very much subscribe to your theory on the Rockets and James Harden, and I believe that they will be an incredibly dangerous team. I think that, you know, the reason why I think it's more wide open is just because you've drastically multiplied the variables, right? Like, and when you do that, there's going to be more of a chance that things happen differently than they normally do or that you plan for. You know, it looked like it was going to be Lakers or Clippers out of the West, right? And right. I would have said it was going to be Bucks or Celtics out of the East. But, you know, the margin between these teams is not so drastic that you couldn't have, let's say, you know, one team who had, you know, two key pieces who were all in on their workouts over the last 4 months and one team who didn't, you know, and maybe that affects the, you know, their efficacy or their ability to ramp up endurance wise, or, you know, in some ways, even the chemistry, you know, on floor, you know, or, you know, you could have a team that was like kind of on the brink. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Toronto Raptors are a tougher team than they would have been maybe in the playoffs, like this time around. Because, like, I really, really think that Nick Nurse is about as good as it gets when it comes to ingenuity and winning a single game, you know, and developing the proper mindset of his group. And could he not say, like, you know, I mean, could he not get that group flowing and believing that, like, why couldn't you upset somebody in this circumstance? You know, I just think that, like, I think that when you break the normal inertia of the season, all of a sudden, like, things don't feel inevitable. You know, it kind of feels like a new slate. And because of that, I do think it widens the field. You know, maybe in the East it widens it so that Toronto is even more of a viable player and Philadelphia is, you know, and you're looking at them and you're saying, hey, you know, these teams can really compete. Or, you know, maybe in the West it does welcome in a team like, you know, like Houston, you know, or maybe an upset in one round. But the other more tangible thing, Alan, why I think it widens is the virus itself. You know, if you have one team end up with a key player who gets it and they miss 2 weeks, you know, and I mean, I know that goes without saying and that's nothing we can predict, but like, that's why I think the field opens up even more, you know, because, you know, there is, you know, there's a real chance, and the NBA is doing a great job mitigating it as much as humanly possible. But, you know, there's a chance that you're going to have some key team lose a key player in a playoff series and then not be able to get back on the floor. And if that happens, you know, obviously that could swing a series one way or another. So I think it's going to feel like a crapshoot. I do think, Alan, that when you talk about the teams competing and the players competing, I think that they're going to, you know, regardless of crowd or whatever, I think they're going to be fully invested because, you know, when you're on that floor going up against somebody else who's great at their craft, you know, you just want to beat them. You know, you do. Like, when you're a competitor, you just want to beat them. So that part of it, I think, will feel like normal when we're watching the players actually compete against each other. But I just think the circumstances around it widen the field a bit.
Yeah, I do agree that when it is a legit game, you're definitely going to see the competition level rise up. And it's also the great players are the ones that are going to dictate that too, because they're the ones that are going to decide where this scrimmage is going. If you've ever seen those scrimmages in those gyms, the best players are the ones that really decide how hard we're going to play today. And I think you'll certainly see that. But it's going to feel like AAU. And for a lot of guys, it's going to be that part, I think, will also play into this thing. Before I let you go, and again, Ryan Rucco joining us here. And Rooks, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks for giving giving us some time here. Sabrina, I ask you, what does she mean for not just the Liberty, but for the WNBA? You're going to be calling a lot of their games. A superstar coming out of college, a player who really, again, became more of a mainstream athlete that everybody got to know. The league has seen players like this come into it, but she, there's something special about her with the next generation of fans. What does she mean, and how excited are you to see what she can do at this level?
Man, I'm so excited, and, you know, I do think that it shows our engagement and interest in her, right, that we have her in our opening game. You know, we have Seattle, New York, which will happen this Saturday at noon, and it'll be, you know, Sue Bird against Sabrina Ionescu, you know, the best point guard in the league's history against, you know, one who certainly hopes to rise to that place. So I think that Sabrina is amazing for the sport because she crosses over like you're talking about, because she's a star who, you know, even the casual sports fan has heard of. I also think that the Liberty being good is going to be good for the league as well. And I do think Sabrina will bring wins to this team, even if it's not this year, because of how many rookies they have. I think they'll be better than people would think. And I think eventually they will be, you know, a championship contender. And then, you know, when we get back to normal, you're going to have, you know, Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving sitting courtside at Barclays Center to watch Sabrina. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that stuff's great for the league. I think it's huge. You know what? I also think her connection with Kobe is huge. You know, Kobe was an incredible ambassador for the WNBA. And I think, you know, they had, I mean, she would call Kobe her best friend. You know, she had this incredible connection to Kobe. And I think she almost, you know, takes the torch, even though she was going to be on the floor and he was going to be off it. You know, he was going to be this very front and center champion of the league, you know, and now she is sort of the player that embodies the support of Kobe, you know. And so for all those reasons, and most importantly, her incredibly dynamic skill set and competitive nature, I think she's going to be must-watch TV. And I think she's going to be a real factor in the league for years to come, and sports in general. Like, she will definitely permeate the New York sports scene. You will at times on your show talk about Sabrina Ionescu, and that's good.
Wow, you're calling it now. I'll take it. All right, before I let you go, Rooks, I can't let you go without at least one little Star Wars thing. All right. I saw you tweet that, because I've seen rankings for the movies, and everybody wants to power rank them, you know, all the different episodes, right? And
yes,
you have Return of the Jedi as number one over to me, arguably the greatest sequel ever in movie history. Yeah, I said it. Empire Strikes Back. Explain yourself.
Well, okay, so you are right in the sense of Empire Strikes Back, I would say, is a better movie. Okay, if I had to just break down quality,
the greatest
of the movie,
twist,
right,
in the history of movie making. I mean, yeah, the greatest dilemma.
100%. And it's not. And I am obsessed with Empire. I love Empire. It's no slight to Empire. My reason, and it's just my personal favorite. If you ask me, what do I think is the better quality movie? I still would go Empire.
Okay,
but my reason for loving Return of the Jedi and why it's number one on me is when you go to Empire Strikes Back, like, I don't think you've felt any conflict in Vader yet, right? Like, you know, he reveals this information, but there's no part of you that sees, like,
no, he's still evil,
any softening on him. Yeah, right. And there's no hint of softening. And my two favorite scenes come in that movie. One, when Luke goes to turn himself in to Vader, and Vader talks about, like, so you've accepted it, whatever, right. And he says, I can feel the conflict, you know, within you, Father. Mm-hmm. Come with me. The first time, not in the throne room, but the first time. And he says, it's too late for me, son.
Right.
The Emperor is your master now, whatever, and choose him away. And then when Luke leaves, and he says, like, then my father is truly dead. And
right.
And Vader leans on, like, that railing. You know, he leans
as if
on
he
the
was,
railing.
Yeah.
And like, he's exasperated. And it's almost like he's exhaling, like, shoot, he's right, I am conflicted. And and he does this all without saying a word. And without you seeing his facial expressions.
Physical.
And it's like,
yeah,
oh, it's amazing.
But Ryan,
that's my favorite scene.
But that's when he becomes emo Darth. Like, I can't, I'm not. I thought it was just far more compelling.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
It was far more compelling to see him literally, like, trying to, like, when he reveals that, and then I thought the conflict in Luke, as if he realized, like, now my life makes sense. Now all this stuff that I'm seeing, all these visions, all this stuff, this is now all making sense. And, oh, my God. This is really happening. Like, that was so far more compelling. But you know what? They're already yelling at me because I'm way too long. So we're gonna have to do this some other time. But I love your reasoning. But I think at least we can agree that they're definitely among the top two in the great saga. But we'll discuss more at another time.
I love it.
I know you're extremely busy. Man. It's great to catch up with you again. Thanks so much. I look forward to hearing you on whatever network for whatever game, but that's your versatility, and I love it. So all the best to you, Rooks. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, brother.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.